Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome, everyone, to Owl Post, a Harry Potter podcast. I am one of the Muggle hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she will be for the rest of the Harry Potter series, the one and only, Drea Kaufman.
I'm so excited.
That's right. You're not a Muggle, though. Yeah, I'm the resident Muggle. You're the, you know, the wizard.
Why can't we both be wizards?
Witch.
I think we should.
Oh. I was trying to make me feel better.
Thanks. So,
like that you were the cooler one. No, I would say we're
both wizards.
Yeah,
I got sorted.
I think we've both been through the Harry Potter series quite a few times. So I guess that makes us more like wizards and witches,
right?
Yes,
we can be the resident Hogwarts professor or whatever. I don't remember what the American house is called.
Okay. Yeah. No, I like that. Ivamori, I don't remember which house that I'm in there either. That's another discussion for another day. But we are here at chapter one of Harry Potter, The Boy Who Lived. And I am really excited to start this process of talking through the series. And one of the things that really struck me about this first chapter, Drea, especially rereading it, and I mean, I've read each one of these books five or six times, so it's pretty crazy. But the thing that really struck me this time reading it was the fact that the story starts from a completely different perspective that we don't really get much later on in the series. In fact, we only get little snippets, but the fact that we're introduced to the world of Harry Potter through the eyes of a Muggle, the Muggle family of the Dursleys, I honestly think is kind of fascinating.
And we get to see this different, I don't know, attitude, this feeling of like everyone's celebrating and he's just the most oblivious of all oblivious to everything. It's just a different, it's a feeling I like forgot that when I was reading it, like when I was rereading it, I was like, oh yeah. For me, I think the very first sentence like had me hooked, and I forgot how quickly she got me hooked. Is I think it's like the sassiness of the last part when she's like, "They were perfectly normal. Thank you very much." I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right. Okay."
What's funny too is that the person who will kind of pick up that sass in the book series is going to be Harry. Like she's almost writing in his because he has that very dry sense of humor in the storylines, and so it almost does seem as though you're hearing his voice, even though you haven't heard his voice yet, because he's a baby, and we haven't even met him by the first sentence.
We barely have met him by the end of the chapter.
Right, exactly. And I think what's so great about the way in which she starts this first chapter, and she starts the saga, is to introduce you to the wizarding world very slowly, but do it through an avenue that seems familiar to you. You know, you got people who are like just kind of everyday people who go to work. They're not exceptional or anything like that. In fact, they're the people who would scoff at anybody doing anything that they wouldn't consider quote unquote normal. And I love the way that she throughout this chapter slowly just kind of drips in more and more and more of the wizarding world until the very, you know, like the last three pages of it are all of the wizarding world come crashing into this world. And it's just really nice. And it's interesting because, yeah, we don't really spend too much time in the Muggle world, really, after this. You know, the times we do, we're with Harry, and so we don't really feel as removed from the world at all. So, you know, it's really, really interesting to start the story like this. I guess I get the question I'm coming up with it for you is, why do you think that she starts the story like that with the Dursleys? Do you have any idea of why she might be doing that?
Well, I don't necessarily know if I have a theory on why she started with the Dursleys specifically, because you definitely get painted more a picture of them slightly later on, how absolutely terrible they are, or if she wants you to, you know, understand that Harry's conditions are just so deplorable.
Right.
But I think she starts out in the Muggle world in order to make it relatable, right? She wants to put you in a place where you're familiar with where you are already. You can see yourself getting up and going to work, or you can see yourself getting up and going to school or whatever and starting your day. And then the next thing you know, like, everyone's had that thing happen to them where their life has changed. And I think she wants to put everyone in that familiar frame of mind before she starts introducing, like, too many things that we aren't familiar with or that stretch our imagination. She wants you to buy in before she starts doing that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good thought. And as you're saying that, I was thinking you're absolutely right, because as Mr. Dursley kind of experiences the strangeness that's going around him, like, he notices a weird cat. You know, I mean, who hasn't noticed a weird cat around their house every once in a while? And this one just happens to look like it's wearing spectacles and staring at him very, very intently. So that's a strange thing. And then he notices that there are more owls about and people dressed funny, you know. And so she's kind of laying the foundation for the way in which the wizarding world works through the eyes of us, the Muggles. And I think it is a wonderful way to kind of get you acclimated to things without you even really knowing that you're getting acclimated. Yep. It's kind of genius.
And I love that he, like, has to backtrack and he has to convince himself these things aren't really happening. Like, a cat won't read a street sign. It's just looking and trying to be like, no, it was really reading it, you know? And the things like that where she puts the idea in your mind that a cat could be reading a street sign, and then no, I'm sorry, it's just looking at it, and then you're like, oh wait, what? I like, she like teases you just this first chapter, just like little bits.
No, I think it's really cool the way that she does that, and I like the focus on the Dursley family, because, you know, for what we'll learn later on in the way that they treat Harry, you know, they're not awful here. They just kind of seem like a very mundane, normal family who, you know, the dad is very much worried about making it at work. The mom is a little bit of a busybody, you know, and their son is the one that they dote on so much that, you know, he's going to grow up to be a bratty kid. You know, and so, I mean, it's just, it's very cliched, but in some ways that doesn't really, I don't know, does it bother you at all, the cliches that she uses for the Dursleys, you know, the wife tall and skinny, the dad very, very large, you know, and the son that we just know is going to turn out to be a royal pain in the patootie.
She's already hinting at that right now. You learned a new word today.
Yeah.
Won't.
Yeah. Well, and this is funny. In the British version, the word is shan't.
Oh, that would be so much harder to be your new word.
I know. I mean, I'm so glad that Scholastic changed that for me. You know, that. In fact, gosh, if they hadn't called it Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, who knows if we would even be reading it. So, I mean, philosopher, I don't... American sensibilities are so offended right now.
For those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, there are two different versions of the first book, and it's the Philosopher's Stone and the Sorcerer's Stone. And the Sorcerer's Stone has it written in American English or United States English, and the Philosopher's Stone is in, like, United Kingdom English, or British, if you will. So, as for the stereotypes, I'm not really one for stereotypes. But I guess it didn't really bother me because you're just kind of describing my family. So my mom was a tall housewife and my dad worked and was a rather round fella. So, I mean, this was just like reading about my family on a page. They didn't want to be exceptional. They didn't want to do anything that made them stand out. Like, they were happy coming home and doing their thing and... Like, that was them. So for me, maybe it was just a little too real that it didn't bother me. But yeah, I mean, I think she is painting a picture and she just had to pick a family. And that's the one she picked.
You know, and I think, too, and this is the thing where I think cliches actually really help in a story. And we, I guess maybe this goes back to my question. We don't spend a lot of time with the Dursleys much. So what you need is, in your mind, the cliches. So you automatically can picture who they are without her having to spend copious amounts of page time telling you about them. I think that's probably the main reason. So the way that she describes them quickly in this chapter, it's not a long chapter. You know, I think in the book it's about 17 or 18 pages, but of course it's children's font, so it's pretty large.
So it takes like 10 minutes to read the chapter.
Exactly, it does. But I think that's the exact reason for doing that, because we all have in our mind what that is without having to spend too much time focusing on it. And they are going to be the bane of Harry's existence, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think that's something that, again, she doesn't want you to...
She doesn't want to have to spend a lot of time describing the character roles for you to get the character enough for her to now deviate from those roles. Like, she needs you to know that Aunt Petunia is a housewife, and she needs you to know that Uncle Vernon... Yeah. I was like, hold on, the name's losing me. It's right in front of me. That Uncle Vernon is sort of your typical business, white collar, middle management person. Like, she needs you to understand these basics so that when she tells you more about their personalities later, these things already make sense. And I think that's, I think you're exactly right. I think that's exactly why she did that. And it was smart.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I think another thing that I'm just thinking of now, I think that she's pointing to the fact, which she's going to get to so much later on in the series, and it's going to kind of continue to build throughout the series, which is Harry's family, that blood is thicker than water, but, you know, it's not always, family isn't just about blood. It's about who you choose to be beside you. And the true family that Harry will have one day isn't going to be the Dursleys. It's going to be everybody else that he finds in his life at school and with the Weasleys. And I mean, it's going to be so much bigger than that. So I think she's really setting the stage for saying that both of them are important, because obviously the blood relationship, it's going to be huge in this storyline. But so are the people that Harry is going to find later on in this story, and then of course continue to grow closer and closer to throughout the rest of the series. So I think she does such a great job of setting the foundation for both of those things, even just in the first chapter.
And as you were talking, I started thinking too more about the stereotype aspect, and for me, she uses the stereotype aspect throughout the whole series. So we're introduced to it in one way here where they're completely unoriginal. And then later on, we get introduced to another family that has a white collar dad that goes into work and a housewife who stays home and takes care of the kids. But it's a completely different family dynamic, and it's a completely different environment Harry finds himself in. So I think it's interesting too, because I don't know that I really thought about that till just now. So I think it's a good way too to show contrast, in that just because they are these stereotypical roles doesn't necessarily mean like that they have to be a certain way. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's able to show two sides of the same coin in two different families and be like, yeah, they're essentially the same thing, but here's why they're totally different, and they mean different things to Harry. And it could be why the Weasleys become so important to Harry, and he's comfortable because he's used to that. So,
well, and I think that and this is going to be the key to every single part of the Harry Potter story, which is love and the difference between the Dursleys and the Weasleys, which I think there's no mistake in the fact that those are so similar, as you're pointing out, is that the Dursleys don't care about anybody else but themselves, and that's set up here, whereas the Weasleys care about everybody, almost sometimes to the exclusion of themselves. Mr. and Mrs. Weasley are so giving and so caring to not only their children, but to everybody else that is friends of their family. And they're one of the most mistreated people in this series. And yet, I think one of the things that draws Harry to them is that they're good. I can't believe this is all coming together. They're so much like Harry as a family. Like, he's been mistreated his whole life, and yet he's still loving and caring and kind. I mean, obviously, all of the Weasleys have their issues. You know, they can be spiteful and mean, and the brothers can sometimes be not so nice to other people or to their own siblings. You know, Ron has some of his own prejudices because he's part of the wizarding community, that kind of stuff. But on a whole, the biggest, I think, thing that comes from their family is this big heart. Yeah.
Well, and the idea that they're doing what they think is right and not what they want to appear like. So you get the Dursleys who are trying to appear normal and who want to be seen and not stand out. And they, you know, the chapter talks about her being a snoop. You know, she's got an exceptionally long neck so she can, you know, spy on the neighbors and stuff like that. Because she's trying, it's that whole like putting others down to make yourself feel better versus the Weasley family who doesn't do that.
Yes.
Who puts people ahead even if it puts them down because they know they're doing the right thing. And at the end of the day, they go to bed feeling great about themselves. So, you know, it's also that sort of dichotomy. But I think that that introduction to the family being so wrapped up in aesthetics is big in this first chapter. And I think for 17 pages, she painted a nice picture already that we're about to hit the ground running with the rest of the family. And I think this is the book you get the most of the Dursleys. And I think this chapter, obviously, because it's almost all about the Dursleys, is like their shining moment to not be so shining.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think of another book where we get this much of the Dursleys. I think book 5, because he spends so much
time
at
home.
Which is
the one, well, which is the one where he goes back and tries to leave and Dumbledore won't let him leave?
Well,
it's 6.
Because
I think that's the other time that they may be present in 4 a lot, but I think that's the one where you learn more about the family.
Right, and... No, yeah, and Order of the Phoenix is, you know, where he's spending so much time that summer at home and nobody's writing him, he's not hearing from Dumbledore. Yeah, so, I mean, you're right, there really isn't very much time that we spend with them until later on. So this really has to set the stage, this book, and I think it does a really marvelous job on it. So a couple other fun differences. We'll refer to this book as the Philosopher's Stone because we're cool like that. We're hip. No, just because that's really the original title. That's, you know, but it is different. There are some things throughout this first chapter that I noticed words that they do change. Like instead of won't, it shan't. Instead of crowd in the U.S., it's lot. They're lot. Instead of a lemon drop, which... In the U.S. version, in the British version, it's sherbet lemon. So that's the...
It makes so much more sense.
Yeah, it makes so much more sense because that's why that is the password to get into his office. It does. In the U.S., they call them trash can lids. It's just a dustbin lid. And the British version, of course, it's a motorbike instead of a motorcycle. And then what was really interesting is there's the scene where they've all said goodbye to Harry and Hagrid says in the U.S. version, I'll be taking Sirius's bike back now. And in the British version, he says, I'd best get this bike away.
Huh.
And so it just there's some phrasing issues. I don't know why they changed this stuff, honestly. It's very strange to me. That they do, but...
Well, I'm wondering if in the first print, if when it came overseas and they had some... I mean, because this is meant to be a children's book, or at least a young adult book, and I wonder if too many children who were, like my sister, learning to read, had a hard time even understanding what it meant, if it wasn't, like...
Maybe.
What they were...
But, I mean, I feel like, you know, I was learning to read when I... And stuff. I was a really young reader when I read the Chronicles of Narnia books, and they're all written... in very much British colloquial speech. And, you know, I just learned to basically speak like a Brit for those books. By Jove! You know, and that kind of stuff.
Okay, so my copy of The Sorcerer's Stone also says, I'd best get this bike away.
Nice, nice. And I have the Scholastic. So
I have a recent reprint of it that I got at a local bookstore here.
That's really interesting. Yeah, this copy is from 97.
I have text from 97, an imprint from 1998.
That's so weird.
So weird.
Anyway, so some things we'll bring up throughout the series, just because I have both versions of the book, and I find it interesting that they would change these things. A question that I came up with, and I thought this was really interesting, because, you know, McGonagall and Dumbledore have the conversation about, you know, he who must not be named, and why don't we just call him Voldemort?
Yes, I forgot that happened.
And I thought, yes, me too. And I thought it was so interesting that they already have this conversation about the idea of names, and that if you change the name of something, it changes how you feel about it, and that things should be called their proper name, because otherwise you either give it more power or less power, and the way in which that will play out throughout the rest of the series, like, you know, the word mudblood or something like that, there's a lot of power in words and what we call things, and we can either degrade something or we can make something bigger than it should be by calling it by a different name or not calling it by its name at all.
And I find it interesting because that comes out kind of throughout her whole series. And I'll be interested when this comes up again, when the emphasis on his name, it comes up kind of consistently. And then you sort of actually get explained later about using his name. And but I forgot, because in the movies you don't get introduced to Voldemort's name until like way further in, until like they're in Diagon Alley and Harry is pulling it out of Hagrid. And here she starts you off right away. First chapter, end of the chapter, you already know the name of the bad guy for the entire series. Like, she just lets you have it. And I think I actually kind of appreciated that more than waiting for it in the movie. So, but I had completely forgotten that we got an introduction to Voldemort here.
Well, and we also, in that very same section, Professor McGonagall says, you know, but you're different. Everybody knows you're the only one who, you know, oh, all right, Voldemort was ever frightened of. And he says, you flatter me. Voldemort had powers I'll never have. And she says, only because you were too, well, noble to use them. And we already get our first hint that there's something about Voldemort and his magic that even this great character that we're being introduced to here, Dumbledore, who is apparently, quote unquote, scary enough for Voldemort to be scared of him, it's a big deal, but she's already also setting up that there's this magic that he possessed that nobody else would use if they were a good guy. And I think that's really fascinating.
I think she does a really great job. And I think the introduction to the magical characters, I think she gives you a really good, like, sort of, before she even introduces the houses and the various types of wizards and magic and stuff, she's already sort of introduced to you all four houses with these four characters. Like, you kind of already have an idea that there's a really intelligent one, that there's a really talented one, that there's a really, like, or there's a really brave one, there's a really talented one, and then there's like the good-hearted, kind one. Like, she gives you all four of those depictions in this very first chapter. She already sets you up to like explain those to you, which you don't notice.
That's fascinating. I never thought about that Ravenclaw, Slytherin, Hufflepuff, and Gryffindor are all represented in this scene. Yeah. Well, it's nice to know that Dumbledore's the Ravenclaw.
I know, right?
So... yeah, it is. It makes me feel better about myself being a Ravenclaw.
But yeah.
So, which, by the way, have you been sorted into a house on Pottermore? And which house are you?
I'm a Ravenclaw.
Ah, two Ravenclaws. And, oh, goodness. This is going to be a cerebral podcast.
Well, if it's fair, I also took one that like tells you like which two mash of houses you'd be. And I was a Gryffindor. So.
Oh, nice. I like that. I need to take that quiz then. You need to send that to me so I can take it. Anyway, maybe we'll put it in the show notes so everybody can take it as well. And hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty and let us know what house you are, because we'd love to know. It's always a lot of fun. Another thing that really strikes me here rereading this chapter was the idea of that they talk about Harry's scar.
Mm-hmm.
And they mention, obviously, he has the scar, and that Dumbledore says that he wouldn't remove the scar, even if he could, because scars can be useful. And he makes a joke about how his one on his left knee is the perfect map of the London Underground. But I thought, what an important lesson. The very first chapter, and the thing that J.K. Rowling will drive home over and over again, is that adversity is important. That bad things that happen to you, how you deal with them, and what you learn from them are so important to your life. And I really do think it's one of the most important lessons that she teaches anyone, kids to adults, is that just because something bad happened to you doesn't mean that it's bad. You know, in the sense that, like, you can't get anything from it, that scars aren't important for us to have. I mean, we all have scars. I've got a few. I've got one on my left knee, actually, as well, just like Dumbledore. It's not a
map of the London Underground, though.
It's not a map of the London Underground. No, unfortunately not. But all of the different scars I had, whether they're physical or emotional, they all have taught me something, you know? And I love that that lesson is right here, you know, a few pages into this book, and she'll continue to drive that lesson home over and over again. And I think it's phenomenal.
It always makes me think there's an episode of the TV show Parks and Rec where Chris Pratt's character tries to become a police officer and he doesn't get in. And one of the other characters comes over to him and they're like, this is a really important time in your life. Like, this is a pivotal moment for you. And like, how you choose to handle this is going to define the rest of your life. And it was sort of like that emotional scar, right? Like, he can either let it consume him, or he has to make a different choice and figure out how to learn from it and become empowered by it. And it's that lesson that always sort of resonates with me. So I'm really glad you pointed that out.
The last thing that I think that really stuck out to me about the chapter, Drea, was this whole idea of putting Harry with the Dursleys in the first place. And, you know, that McGonagall's like, but, you know, he's going to be the most famous person in our world. And that Dumbledore says it would be enough to turn any boy's head, you know, famous before they can even walk and talk, famous for something he won't even remember. And I thought, what a wonderful thought about the idea of fame and how damaging it can be, especially before you can handle it. And the main reason that Dumbledore cares enough about Harry already to not want him to grow up in a world where he feels entitled. And I think, wow, what another wonderful lesson here in a few pages in, that, you know what? Maybe it's better if you don't get everything handed to you on a silver platter, mm-hmm. You know?
Well, so Dumbledore has all these insights about Harry. You know, just get rid of the scar. He wants him to stay with the Dursleys, like all these things. And you later find out things about why he made these decisions. But I found myself trying to see if these decisions in this first chapter were intentional already, because he's being very coy,
Yes.
And
yeah.
You don't know that right now. You don't know that yet. And it's interesting knowing that and reading it again and being like, you coy bastard. Like,
no, exactly. And I think what's wonderful is that nobody knows the secret. The Dumbledore doesn't trust anybody else with this secret until it will be Harry later on who will know the secret. And we don't even know that the letter that the Dursleys get tells them the secret. This is the reason why you need to keep this child, whether you want mm-hmm. to or not.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a pretty phenomenal thing, is that the only, you know, three people in the universe who know this secret and why Harry is where he is the Dursleys, who are never going to talk about it to anybody, because they don't want anybody to know, and Dumbledore, because he's the only one that he trusts with this. And yeah, you're absolutely right, because you can tell in the chapter that Dumbledore is very much of the thought process already that, oh yeah, it's great that Voldemort's gone, but you almost can hear the but in his voice. Even though he does or says it, you can really almost hear it as you read what he says to everyone about him being
gone. Well, he's like misdirecting them. They'll be like, she asked him, McGonagall asked him about the letter, like, do you really think a letter is going to do anything? And he was like, oh, well, we'll see. And you're like, oh.
But I also think that we'll see later on the reasons why maybe Dumbledore doesn't trust anybody else with this information, even somebody like McGonagall, because of the way in which trust was misplaced by the Potters and it caused the end of their life in the first place. So, I mean, what's wonderful is that when you start to put all these pieces together, you can see that these characters have good motivations for what they're doing, especially Dumbledore here in this first chapter. And it is really wonderful. And so, and then of course, there's the wonderful connection here about Sirius and the bike that, you know, Hagrid's on, which we don't find out about until later on exactly how all that went down. But we have our first mention of Sirius Black, the man in which all women apparently fall in love with by that third book.
We also get introduced to Godric's Hollow in this chapter already. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what the significance of that is, but she's already sort of name dropped that. Which I thought was really interesting. I'd completely forgotten about. So we'll see how much of this I remember when we get to that. I probably won't remember it then either.
No, you're absolutely right. Godric's Hollow, it is something that will be huge in the last book. But that's 7 books from now. Well,
it's like, am I ever going to remember this?
Yeah.
No, but then when I realize I haven't, it's going to be amazing.
Yep. It is incredible, and I think that's one of the things that makes this so fun as we get to walk through this series like this, is that you get to take all those little puzzle pieces and, oh my gosh, I totally forgot this was here. Like you said, I didn't really necessarily remember that the conversation about Voldemort with this depth was already in this chapter. So it makes for so much fun mining Harry Potter in this way. So I'm very excited to continue on with chapter 2 next week. I hope you've enjoyed us looking through The Boy Who Lived, and I hope that this series will help people either reread the series with us. I'm sure everybody will buzz way ahead, you know, or if you've never read Harry Potter, what a perfect opportunity to pick up the Harry Potter books with us and read through it with us. Again, I'm pretty sure that if you pick up the first book and you read the first chapter with us, you'll be on like chapter 20 by, you know, the time we're at chapter 4. Yeah. I hope you will join us on this wonderful magic carpet ride. Drea, I know that there are a few places that you are online. And so if anybody wants to get a hold of you and talk to you more about the series, where can they do that?
So I am on Twitter at PCFChick. And I'm on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, COFFMAN. I also want to encourage you, if you're not a big reader, or you don't have the capacity to do that, the audiobooks also go chapter by chapter. They introduce the chapter as they do it. And I don't remember the actor they used to do the books, but it's amazing.
The American version is Jim Dale. And the British version is...
Jim Dale is the one that I've listened to. So if you aren't a huge reader, but you still want to get the go by chapter by chapter, you can do the audiobook and just pause the chapter or listen to all the chapters all the way through. Some people aren't a big fan of the audiobooks. I like to do both. I like to listen to the audiobooks while I work and then I actually read the book. So another option for you to sort of digest if you choose.
Completely agree. And so, you know, you've got Jim Dale for the American versions, you've got Stephen Fry for the British versions, and another fantastic actor. And so either way that you go, whether you're reading the books along with us or you listen to them, you can't go wrong. I've listened to the audio. I'm not a huge audiobook person, but I've listened to the Harry Potter audiobooks on some big cross-country journeys. And it is a lot of fun. So I'm right there with you. I highly recommend them. Make sure you check us out on iTunes. Give us a star rating and review there. A brand new podcast. really need your help. Get that star rating and review in there. And of course, when you do, we'll give it you a shout out on the show. And thank you so much for helping us out and helping us grow, getting the word out about Owl Post. You can also find us online with the rest of the shows at The Nerd Party. You can find that at thenerdparty.com. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, which is a wonderful place to be able to see everything that we're doing. We announce all the shows there on Twitter. And as I mentioned earlier, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. Great place to join in the conversation as well. Now, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02, Instagram and Rushing. You'll also find me on the Trek FM network doing a couple of different shows. I do the 602 Club, which is so much fun. It's a general geek show. We talk about all things geeky. We've gone through all the Harry Potter films. We've done a lot of Bond films. We've done Star Wars. We've done new, old movies. I mean, it's just everything that we can cram into that show. We try to do TV shows as much as we can. I mean, it's just a blast, so make sure you check that out. Also doing The Orb there with Chris Jones, which is all about Deep Space Nine. And if you're a huge Star Wars fan, make sure that you do check out Aggressive Negotiations here on The Nerd Party with me and John Mills as we just dive into another fun topic in that saga each and every week. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.